Spirit Radio Podcasts.
I'm very pleased to say that Katrina Lynch has joined me in the studio. We're going to talk about parenting, and particularly we're going to talk about teenagers today. Is that right?
Yeah. There is a very natural, healthy, good period in a teenager's time, and sometimes it can even evolve as young as 10 or 11, where you have what we call a hero worship syndrome. And this hero worship can be of any sex. It could be, you know, a guy who really admires some footballer or pop star or something or other, and it could be another male. And long ago, we always looked on this as being very, very natural, and we just kind of said, yeah, that's fine. It's kind of like, it's what
you can have
that
within families too.
Exactly.
Worshipping kind of your older sister, older brother.
It's a kind of a crush. We used to call it, you know, you get a crush, and you can get a crush on somebody of the same sex as yourself. And it's nothing to do with, a sexual thing at all. It's admiration for who the person is. I remember being really, I admired this girl that I was in school with, and I must have been about 15 at the time, and I remember going out and getting a pencil case the same as hers and trying to pack my school bag the same as hers, because to me she seemed to be a great person and she had it all together, and I admired her and she was very pretty and all those sort of stuff, and I just wanted to emulate her in so many ways. And as I say, this is a very natural hero-worshipping phenomena. And, you know, as kids, I don't know, to be honest, I really don't know what teenagers do nowadays. But, you know, we used to kind of, and my children went through the posters up on the wall and all this sort of stuff. And you're claiming your territory. And these are the things that I am interested in.
So teenagers' bedroom stuff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, the point is, whereas we used to look on this as a very natural progression, Adler, one of the famous child psychologists, says that the teenage years are a rehearsal for adulthood. So we experience.
So when I was standing in my bedroom dancing around with my electric guitar, that was rehearsal for adulthood.
That was rehearsal for adulthood. Yes, because you were there and you did it, and you came out the other side saying,
Yeah,
I'm actually not going to do that. I'm just not going to be there.
Oh, but you haven't seen me in my bedroom recently.
I can do party pieces.
Oh, yes,
with the
yes.
people who the really love pieces. Me and they put up with me.
But rehearsal for adults, so you're becoming a sort of grown up, but you're not a grown up.
You're beginning to experience the things, the emotions, the challenges, all those sort of stuff that adults experience. But it's kind of like starting a motorbike or a car, you know, it kind of turns over a couple of times, but it doesn't quite fire properly. So these hero worship crush stages, very natural, very normal, and we always used to guide and direct and encourage our kids out the other side. Red alert.
What?
What is happening now is when children, and I'm talking about teenagers, verbalize to somebody else, it could be a friend or whatever at all, that, you know, oh, I really like Mary so-and-so, or I just think she's brilliant, I love the way she dresses and I love her clothes and all that sort of stuff. There's an immediate jump on the bandwagon that because you're admiring somebody during this very natural, normal hero worship stage, you know, that you must be, this is you with a sexual orientation towards people of the same sex.
Right, so you should make a massive decision for the rest of your, you know, 70 years of life that you are in fact
exactly.
homosexual.
Now, why am I saying all this? I am saying this because, as we, my husband and I always used to say when we were bringing up our kids, nature abhors a vacuum. And if you don't get in there and fill it with the truth, somebody else will come along and fill it with rubbish, okay? So make your kids aware at a time that you think is suitable that, you know, it's very natural and normal to have this hero worship stage. Or if you hear your kids talking in admiring ways about somebody of the same sex, Don't take a horror trip, okay? Get in there and, you know, chat away normally to them and let them know this is very natural and normal for you to admire somebody of the same sex. Get ahead of the posse and let them know this is okay, and it does not mean that you have an orientation to be sexually attracted to people of the same sex.
Well, yeah, Katrina, yeah. Very, very interesting stuff. Thank you for tackling such a difficult and let's face it, very political topic this morning. As an Irish person, one of the benefits is we're surrounded by the sea, meaning we have a wealth of sea life, fish and so on, living off our coastlines, as you'd expect. But how much seafood do you eat on a regular basis, and what's your favourite type of seafood? Well, researchers at the University College Dublin, UCD, are currently undertaking a study on Irish seafood, the consumption of seafood, that is. And on the line to tell us more, we have Sophie Goffsman, who's going to be telling us a little bit about this study. She's a registered dietitian and master's student on the UCD seafood study. Sophie, you're very welcome to the show.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
Not at all. So Sophie, tell us about the study. What exactly is it you're going to be investigating?
So this study is collaboration between different areas of expertise within UCD. So we are looking at food intake data from different population groups. So there's very little information on the Irish population seafood consumption because past nutritional surveys lack that information. So for that reason, our project aims to collect dietary information on adults in the Irish population that regularly consume seafood. And the reason we want to do that is because we want to assess it to see how often and how much seafood is consumed by adults in Ireland and see how seafood contributes to their diet overall.
Right, okay. What are you hoping to discover through this? What are you expecting to discover? That might be the more interesting question when you do the survey.
So we're looking to find out who eats seafood and how much of it. This to help inform public health policy and help us get a better understanding of who eats seafood in our population, how we can encourage people to consume more seafood, and how it impacts our nutrition overall.
Right. I mean, one of the fascinating things I find, because I'm very fond of some seafood myself, and I went looking quite recently for how I could go and, because I wanted to try and get my hands on some mussels. I absolutely love mussels. It's one of my things. And I find it quite hard, actually, to find a lot of suppliers who would just be able to sort of send me some. I wanted to sort of cook them and have them over for an event. And it was difficult. What I realized was that these suppliers, they tend to supply this seafood abroad, but they don't actually supply a lot of it at home. Now, this could be just because I'm an average punter, but I imagine that it might be sort of more common in other countries that you'd have sort of a lot of merchants selling a lot of seafood online and sort of ways of getting stuff. I'm just not sure there's as much of an interest in it in Ireland as you might expect there would be.
Yeah, so I mean, we're an island surrounded by water, but unfortunately, despite that, there's poor presence in the current Irish diet of fish and seafood. So average European consumption is around 24 kilos per head. The Spaniards are the biggest fans with about 40 kilos per head, but in Ireland we only consume about 16 kilograms of seafood per head each year.
Right.
Back in the day, it was very popular. People caught fish in rivers and cooked them over open fires. In Viking Dublin, things like cod and hake were very popular. Mm. And on the West Coast, shellfish was and still is very popular. But given Ireland's Friday fish tradition, there's some link with possibly the decline of people maybe being less religious, less going to church, less.
Sure, yeah.
And the church advised that fish should be a food of fasting, or red meat.
Yeah.
The red meat would be avoided, and then our fish consumption probably fell, and then so you can see that the older population might be more prone to consuming fish. These days, and then fresh fish might be less popular among young people who maybe don't know how to prepare it as much. But fish counts for about 2% of the total Irish grocery spend. However, good news is that I think our fish consumption is actually growing year by year.
Right, okay, so there is a growing interest. But I mean, just speaking as a dietitian, I mean seafood is very good for you, isn't it? I mean, this is one of the interesting things.
So fish is great for us. It helps develop a healthy body for people of all ages, all through the lifespan. heart disease is one of the leading causes of death in Ireland, but people who eat fish can cut their heart risk by up to 50%
Wow.
Oil-rich fish, such as salmon, is an excellent source of beneficial omega-3, which helps prevent blood clots, keeps your heart healthy, and can lower blood pressure. And it's very healthy for our brain, because our brain is mostly fat. And largely made up of omega-3 fats, which is vital for healthy brain function. So fatty fish is the optimal source to get these omega-3 fats from.
So it's a good idea to be into seafood, isn't it? Into fish generally. Well, so part of your research is looking for participants to get involved with the survey. Can you tell us how we might do that?
Yeah, so if you want to take part, you can email seafood@uc.ie. So that's our email. Then we'll add you to the survey once you're signed up. You'll be asked some questions to make sure you're eligible to take part. Then the study's completely online, so you don't need to come into UCD. There's no face-to-face contact with us, but we're always there to answer any questions via email. As I said, seafood@ucd.ie. Then during the process, we collect some general information about you and your diet using an online questionnaire. This can be completed at home or work on a desktop or laptop or even on your mobile. And then our social media, you can also reach us there, is at Seafood Study, at UCD Seafood Study on Instagram.
Okay.
Or at Seafood Study on Twitter and Facebook.
Great. So we have Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, lots of ways you can get in touch. And when do you think you'll be publishing the results of the survey?
It'll be, I'd say, late next year, so end of 2020.
End of 2020. Well, we should be finding out more about it, but Sophie Gossman, who's part of the UCD Seafood Study, it's great to have you on board. Thanks for speaking to us this morning. I'm very pleased to say that it's time for our Life in Five. And joining me in the studio, we have a very interesting guest. What's Life in Five, first of all? It's where we get to talk to someone about their life, the ups, the downs, how they might have seen God at work in it all by answering five questions they choose from a short list. In studio now to tell us more, we have writer and blogger and many things besides, I'm sure, Rachel Sherlock. Rachel, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
I noticed from glancing at your blog that you're called Sherlock and you live with a person called Watson.
Yeah, this is true, and it gives us great amusement. I think, to be honest, it gives us more amusement than anyone. We take every opportunity to tell people.
Yes. Elementary amusement. Well, yeah. So what, tell us about yourself, though. What else can you tell us?
Yeah, I work in publishing and marketing. I've been doing that for a while, writing about books and things like that. But I'm also pretty active. I do that part-time, and I work for U2000 voluntarily. And I, like you said, run a blog, run a podcast. I'm from Kilkenny, but I live in Dublin now. I did a master's in Nottingham in Viking and Anglo-Saxon studies.
Oh, my heavens above. So, I could ask you, tell us something interesting about Vikings you learned, but that's not one of the questions. Well, Viking and Anglo-Saxon studies, yeah. Remarkable stuff.
I did my dissertation on dragons, so.
Really?
Yeah, I did, on Greek.
Well, it's about time I've met someone who's done a dissertation on dragons. I mean, it's been too long.
I keep running into people, no.
I'm sure not many people have done dissertations on dragons. Very fascinating indeed. Mm-hmm. But it's so nice to meet you, and you're going to be answering these five questions about yourself, and that's always a nice way for us to get to know how God might have been at work in someone's life as well. Yeah. But the first question is, a favourite Bible verse?
Yeah, I did actually take a long time to think about this. I kind of think I'm drawn. You kind of tend to hear people like to the ones of inspiration or hope or those, and they're amazing. But the ones that I kind of come back to are those ones that have like the encapsulating moment of mystery. So I picked John 20:28, which is just when Thomas says, after putting his hands in the wounds of Christ, and says, "My Lord and my God." I really like that. I think there's just so much to meditate upon there, and like the gift that Christ gives him in that moment. He's had this sort of temper tantrum and says, "I won't believe, and you have to prove it to me." And I think he might have gotten a bit embarrassed when Jesus then did show up and did prove it to him, but he was given a moment of real humility to then be the person to announce Christ as God, not just the Son of God in a sort of in a distinct way, but that he is God himself. And I think it's a beautiful moment. I think it's a kind of bolt from the blue in that moment. I really love it.
A profound moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what appeals to you. Yeah.
And I think it's kind of, especially in Ireland, I think it's a bit special, because in the Catholic Mass we have a moment called The Mystery of Faith, where there is a recitation about a particular mystery of faith. There's three of them. There's the death and resurrection. There's Save Us, Saviour of the World, for by your cross and resurrection you have set us free. But only in Ireland are we allowed to say my Lord and my God at that point. Because it's, I think it was a tradition in Ireland, and then when they were formalising the different rubrics, they said, oh, you're only allowed to have these three, and we made this point that said, this is a kerygmatic moment, this is a moment of mystery, and I think at the council they kind of went, well, you guys can do it, but nobody else is allowed.
Well, so it's about time the ancient Celtic Catholics got a bit of their way back from Rome. There you
exactly.
go. That's a fascinating moment. Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, so it's always good to learn things I don't know. So question number two,
mm-hmm.
How does God help you in your work?
I think he helps me in a lot of ways. I guess my biggest struggle would be to define what my work is. Like I said, I work part-time, and then the rest of my time I kind of devote to different, usually faith-based projects. And obviously, Christ really kind of comes out strong there. He's very central to what I'm doing, whether it's writing or organizing retreats or all of those things, bringing people to Christ. I really love that feeling of opening up a space for someone to encounter Christ. But I think he also helps me in my ordinary life. When I'm sat at my desk, at the moment I'm doing a lot of work for a retreat, and it's very easy to get caught up in that and say that's the most important thing, and I don't need to pay as much attention to this job where I just sit at a desk and fill in a spreadsheet. But actually, God is calling me to be Christ in that moment just as much as he's calling me to be Christ to people in every other moment. And so I think he really helps me to stay grounded and to not get so caught up in my own ideas and to be focused on my own ambitions and successes, and actually look at every task that's right in front of me and say, how can I be the person that Christ wants me to be in this moment?
Oh, very nice indeed. So God helping you in the banal and the exciting.
Exactly.
So question number three, where do you see God in everyday life?
I kind of see God in everyday life in all of the things that should and could go wrong but don't. I think I really see how little I am in control in like my everyday. Just this weekend past, I lost my journal. And it's not a diary, it's not like personal information, it's not sensitive information, there's nothing in it. It's just full of to-do lists and notes and all of those things. But it is kind of like what I consider a record of my year. And I was 20 pages before till the end of it, and I lost it. And I was trying not to be upset about it. I was with friends and I was like, oh, just bite the bullet. And I prayed and I said, you know, I know it's not in the house. I have to have lost it when I was grocery shopping. If you want me to find this, it'll turn up. And sure enough, I got an email that said, hey, I found your notebook. You had your email address in the front of it. You can come pick it up. And, you know, that's so completely out of my control. Every time I drive a car and I think, you know, everything about this is out of my control, and that, like, God has to take care of all of those little things, and he does so in a really kind of, I think sometimes I think that God only works in very subtle ways, but often, especially in those things like finding the thing you're looking for or having that moment where the timing just comes right with something, that he can be pretty obvious even when we kind of don't expect him to be.
So only for those who are paying attention, perhaps.
Yeah.
But that's very, very nice. That's everyday life. So, pardon me, a favourite piece of music and why?
Yeah, kind of listen. I did music in my undergrad, and I try to listen pretty broadly. But there's a singer. He's a folk singer from America called Sam Amadon, and what he does is, for the most part, he takes traditional folk tunes and rearranges them. He's a genius, kind of with instrumental rearrangements and kind of changing things to give them new life. And so one of the songs it's a folk song called Prodigal Son, which almost very literally just takes the story from the Bible and goes through it line by line, but in a very beautiful way, in a song. And yeah, it's very moving. And I get excited now every time the Prodigal Son comes up in my readings, because I think of that song. And it's really beautiful and calming, but yeah, very different as well.
And it's one heck of a story, the Prodigal Son,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's always one that excites. Well, that's interesting. So the Prodigal Son, who's the singer?
Sam Amadon.
Sam Amadon.
Yeah. and the song kind of centers on the one line, "I believe I'll go back home." And yeah, I find it very moving. I really love it. Yeah, he's not particularly well known, so I thought, why not
indeed.
Give him a bit more of a platform.
Well, certainly, that's right. So the final question is, a person who had a big influence on you.
Yeah, I think when I read the question, I started to go back very far in the past and think who's inspired me for, you know, years and years. But I kind of settled on someone I came to a bit more recently. It's the author Flannery O'Connor. And I started reading her about 3 years ago, and she kind of blew my mind. She was an American writer in the mid 20th century in the American South, and she's a very peculiarly like American South writer. And she had lupus, and she suffered with a lot of sickness and was kind of confined to her house and her bed. But she wrote these incredibly striking stories that are very evocative and very moving. But probably more important to me is her letters and her prayer journal, where she really has that incredible blend of sarcasm and wit, but also complete humility and a very genuine faith and a genuine relationship with Jesus. And I think it's so refreshing. I think often when we think of inspirational people, they can feel very like one-dimensional, good person, no faults type thing. And it was very inspiring for me to read about someone who had this real kind of character to her and yet married that beautifully with a faith, and a faith that she was able to give to other people as well.
Yeah, indeed. And her stories are extremely striking.
Yes.
So I've read some Flannery O'Connor. Well worth checking those out. And so thank you for telling us those wonderful facts about yourself and those insights. And it's great to meet you, Rachel. But before, tell us about, there's a youth festival kicking off next week, and I'd like you to tell us about it.
Yes, absolutely. So I work with Youth 2000, and we have our kind of major event of the year, which is our summer festival. It's happening from the 15th to the 18th in Congleswood College in Clane. It's donation only, and there are free buses coming from around the country. There are still spaces. Make sure to register online if you want a bed rather than an airbed.
Those who register will be given a real bed.
Exactly.
I see. Yeah.
But it's an incredible weekend. There's going to be about 1,000 young people. We have talks. We have various religious events. We have workshops, games, sport. There's amazing food. And it's a real chance to kind of meet a lot of young people and encounter Christ and encounter people who are really on fire with their faith. And it's I would really recommend it. I started going about 10 years ago now, and they haven't been able to shake me off because it was such a positive experience.
Right, so you've clung on,
yeah.
And now you're sort of helping out as well, which is lovely. So if we're interested, if I'm listening to this, where do I go to register for this summer festival?
It should be on youth2000.ie.
So youth2000.ie. Not too late to sign up.
Nope, not at all. We would love to have everyone come who's interested.
That's right. So, and you can go. It's not no charge, but registering for a bed is the way to go. youth2000.ie. And you are also, of course, as we mentioned, a writer and a blogger. So how do I find out more about reading what you've written and podcasted?
I suppose the easiest place would be to go to my website, which is rachelsherlock.com. That's R-A-C-H-E-L, Sherlock, just like the detective, .com. And there you can find some of the things I've written, and also my podcast, which is called Risking Enchantment. It's a kind of look at culture and literature and art and all of those things through a Christian and through a Catholic lens, and being kind of like actually exploring it and kind of getting into the nitty-gritty of how we can better know Christ through the world around us and the art and culture that we produce. And so you can find that there. You can also find the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, all of your kind of major podcasting downloads.
So we have to look up you, we have to look up rachelsherlock.com, and we'll find it all there, and I'm sure we'll find it on iTunes and so on. Yeah. Well, Rachel, what a pleasure. What an absolute pleasure for you joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. I had a wonderful time.
Yes, well, indeed, all the best with the festival. Indeed, all of your exciting projects, be they dragons or blogging and so on and so forth. But it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
The production company behind TV shows such as Operation Transformation of the Restaurant have a new show coming out later this year. It's focusing on Irish households taking climate action, and they are looking for participants. So if you want to be a TV star, this could be your chance. In studio to tell us more, we have Philip Kampf, who's the owner of Vision Independent Productions and executive producer of the upcoming TV series, which is going to be on RTE. Philip, you're very welcome.
No, thank you. Really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure to have you in. So just tell us a little bit about your company. You've done some pretty exciting projects up to now.
Yeah, we started back in 2004 with the restaurant, which is actually still going on. It's now on Virgin Media. We have a new series starting soon. But our mission in life is always to try and come up with ideas. New ideas is what it's about. But we've had some good ones and some less good ones, you know. But I suppose our strong ones are like shows like The Restaurant. We do Super Garden. We've just done a show called The Big DIY Challenge with PJ Gallagher. And obviously Operation Transformation has been a phenomenal success.
Oh, know? Yeah. It's so, a big, big deal.
Yeah. But it's a great show to work on because you see people changing, you know, and it's one of those shows that when every season it finishes, you come away sort of, you know, feeling, you know, it's a job well done.
You've made an impact in someone's life.
Well, that's it, yeah. And which is a very rare thing to do, because normally that doesn't happen in the job that we do, you know. So
oh sure, yeah.
So yeah. So that's why with this new one, a lot of people asked and said, "Oh look, why can't you do something on planet change and climate change?" And I suppose my initial worry was that it's such a big topic, you know, it and you say, where do you start, you know?
Yeah, how do you make it sort of personal?
Yeah, and how do you make it personal? And like with Operation Transformation, you can see people changing before your eyes, but, you know, if you do something, you know, environmentally friendly, you don't necessarily see anything happen instantly, you know. But I think now we're at a stage where we know we all need to change, we all need to do something. And so really,
but where do you start?
And we thought, well, that we probably should start in the home, you know. In and at first I thought, well, because people go, oh, you know, but Ryanair flying millions of planes and da 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 da. So if I do that, will that have any impact? And actually, all the research says it does. Like what we eat, you know, how we get rid of our waste, how we heat our homes, how we use energy in our homes, you know, how we recycle, all has a huge impact, you know. We as consumers, you know, have a huge amount of control over what we can do, and in a way change the way we do things. And so then just went with a very, very simple idea. Basically what we're going to do is we're going to ask three households to let us into their lives in a sort of very in a way that where we're going to sort of look at everything they do, every move they make,
every tap turned on, every piece of waste,
every toilet flush, every light left on in the hall, right? Right, it's everybody's life. And the one that gets me is, like, since I've started looking into this, I didn't know how complicated the green bins are, you know, because we've been doing it. Like, I don't know about you, but for a long time, we had a sort of plastic bag in the corner that we put a lot of plastic into.
Yeah, that was your green bin.
And apparently I was doing it completely wrong.
Okay.
You know, you're not meant to put it into the plastic bag. By putting it into the plastic bag and putting it into the green bin is a real no-no. So there's lots of these things that you discover are no-nos. We've another one I've discovered that if I took a shower at night instead of the morning, that would actually help in terms of using electricity in a downtime as opposed to at a time when there's a huge amount of pull on the grid.
On the grid, okay.
Yeah. So if you're using it in a downtime, then the more likely chance is that you're using renewable electricity as opposed to electricity that's coming from coal.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yeah, so I was going, God, actually, there are things we can do, you know?
Yeah,
there are
things.
So essentially, what we're going to do is we're asking three households from across Ireland to let us in. We're going to film everything they do, and then we've got a scientist from University of Limerick, two from DCU and one from Oxford, and they're going to look at everything, and then they're going to set them a target. They're going to say, okay, this is how you're living now, but you can do 25% better, and we want you to do 25% better over the next 3 weeks. And then if they do, they get a reward of €2,000 if they're successful.
Oh, wow. Right?
And the €2,000 really is there to say, for most really, it's to say, thank you for trying it. Thank you for doing it. Because like Operation Transformation, seeing other people do things, even seeing other people make mistakes, we all learn. And I also think when you're watching this show at times, you should get you know, there'll be moments of hopefully fun, but also times where you go, that's impossible, or I can't do that, you know? And I think that's it. We really want to be on the cusp of, like, I think if you live in rural Ireland, to turn around and say you have to use public transport all the time becomes incredibly difficult. So I think there are things that we're saying to people, you need to do this, and then people go, well, how is that possible? You know? And I hope that's part of the debate of the show. But really what I'm hoping too is that there's enough little nuggets that come out of it that can go, you know what, we can make that change.
Yeah.
We can do that change. That's something we can do. And I think the other thing I've discovered is that, you know, there's a huge hunger for people who are saying, we want to do something right, or we want to do the right thing. There's an awful lot of people who just go, we want to do the right thing.
Yeah, and what is the right thing?
That's exactly it. They don't know what the right thing is, you know? And there's so many confusing messages. So I'm hoping that out of it we go, well, look, here's some of the right things you can do, and we're going to show you the positive impact that has. And then by doing that, you ultimately are, you know, part of that movement that is taking climate change seriously.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about what you're saying is there's a really practical aspect to this, of just exploring this.
Yes,
absolutely. How could I actually do 25%? How could I improve myself in terms of what I just naturally am doing?
Yes.
And I think a lot of us are just, as you say, just confused. Like the shower thing. Like, when is the most effective time to use electricity? Or how do I pack things efficiently in bins? Or how do I reuse things in an efficient way? Like, there's a lot of stuff where, and there's so much packaging these days as well. It's like, how do I avoid the packaging? Like, all these things, like, it just, you almost feel like you need to be an expert just to get your head around some of this.
Well, I think that's the problem, isn't it? Because, you know, sometimes you pick up a mug and you think, this mug is good, and then you walk down the road and someone says, oh, that mug will take 20 years to... and you go, all right, I thought I was doing the right thing there, but that mug, you know?
That mug's been shipped in from China, mate.
Yeah, and even like electric cars, you go, oh, I think, if we could get an electric car, that would be fantastic, you know? And then people say, oh, the batteries in electric cars, they're destroying something else. So I do think that part of... it's great that we're all talking about it, right? But I do think that I'm hoping out of it we go, okay, you know, here's practical things we can all do. And I also believe that, you know, like the generation that left school and marched into town, you know, and said, look, this actually matters to us, that generation are already on the path to change, you know?
Yeah.
They're not going to tolerate or do the things that my generation have done, you know? And the consequences, they can see the consequences for them and their children, mm-hmm. is true and real.
Yeah, you know? It's a real thing.
It's a real thing. So I think, you know, a lot of people are going, you know, you can't be telling people to eat less meat, you know? But, you know, if the science says, look, we need to change our diet, then it's something that we absolutely have to look at, you know? Mm. It's not something we can ignore. And I think that's, we live at, you know, we've gone through times of great change, and this is a time of great change, and it's about saying, okay, we're well able to embrace this, but we have to do it. And funny, like someone said to me recently, we're in a very privileged position in the fact that we work in the media and we get to meet all sorts of people, mm-hmm. and they get to tell us all sorts of things, and then we move on. But you know, like one person said to me that, you know, those little badges on the back of the car at the moment that say electric, hybrid, you know, they're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, because people will want to be seen to be in an electric and hybrid, because it means I'm part of the team, or I'm part of the crowd that is taking planet change seriously. And I think that's important. That I think what you're going to have is that it's going to be less and less acceptable to do things that damage the planet, because we're essentially, you know, we're going against what we all need to do.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, it's going to be a fascinating show, that's
hopefully,
for sure.
Hopefully.
And we see these people. So you're looking for three households.
So
how do I, so if I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, yeah, I want to give this a try. So what do I do?
We'd love to hear from anybody who just even wants to find out a bit more. And if they could, the show is called What Planet Are You On? And so we have an email, which is all one word, whatplanetareyouon2019@gmail.com. So
right.
It's whatplanetareyouon2019@gmail.com. And if they could just drop us a two-line email saying, love to know more, we'll give them a call, talk them through it. If they want to consider it, great. If they say, actually, this doesn't suit me for time or whatever reason, that's okay as well, you know?
Yeah, but you can be involved. What Planet Are You On? 2019, that's one word, at gmail.com. Well, Philip, it's an absolute pleasure. It's a
Likewise, it sounds like a
fantastic idea, and I think the show is definitely going to be hugely watched, because all of us are sitting there wondering what to do, and this is going to be an insight into what you can do.
Yeah.
But Philip Kampf, that's owner of Vision Independent Productions. It's a real pleasure to have you on board this morning. And best of luck. Let's hope some of those listeners are paying attention to that. What planet are you on? 2019 at gmail.com. Send an email and you could be on the telly.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.